Aloha and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Yenji Denise in for Catherine Cruz. This morning we're opening the phone lines to a topic deeply affecting and dividing communities across the country, immigration and ICE enforcement. Here in Hawaii we've seen a significant increase in arrests and deportations. With the legislative session just a week away, some lawmakers want to revisit state laws, including how Hawaii engages with federal immigration authorities. Our panel of experts includes voices from state government, immigrant advocacy, and an immigration attorney. Have you or someone you know been affected by immigration enforcement? Do you support current federal policies or have concerns about how they're being carried out? Aloha and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Yenji Denise in for Catherine Cruz this morning. It was 1 week ago today that an ICE agent in Minneapolis fatally shot Renee Good outside of an ICE operation. That incident, captured on video, has sparked protests across the country and here in the islands. It's also renewed questions about the use of force and how these operations are being carried out. The Trump administration has made immigration enforcement a top priority. Here in Hawaii, we have seen a significant increase in arrests and deportation. And while the legislative session is just 1 week away, some Hawaii lawmakers are already calling for changes to how local law enforcement engages with federal immigration authorities. At the same time, community volunteers here on Oahu are mobilizing a rapid response network to observe and document enforcement activity. We have a panel of experts to explore how these national developments intersect with our local experience, and we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 808-941-3689. Joining us live in studio are State Representative Della Albalati, Liza Ryan Gill, Executive Director for the Hawaii Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and Immigration Attorney Kevin Block. Good to see all of you this morning. Liza, I want to start with you. Just give us an on-the-ground picture of what ICE enforcement looks like right now here in Hawaii and how it's changed under the current administration.
Thank you for having us, Yenji. Really appreciate the time to share about this. Well, I can tell you right now that we have seen enforcement, that we are currently seeing enforcement on Hawaii Island, that we have very recently seen enforcement over on Maui, and that there has been an increase by at least 35% of detentions across all of Hawaii within the last year. In fact, from January 8th to October 15th of 2025, we saw 194 arrests, up from about 52 from the previous year. So we are seeing a significant increase. We are also seeing many agencies that have other tasks that are usually out, you know, trying to find bad guys and cartels and doing significant work, that are being pulled in to find low-level immigration violations. Many of these arrests are happening out in our community. They call that at large. And so they are going into places. Recently heard approaching a church on a neighbor island and looking for individuals. So they are conducting operations not only at a much higher rate, but also in a much different manner than they did before. Previously, they used to not conduct these types of operations in what we call what were considered sensitive locations, churches, hospitals, schools. Now they are going to those kinds of places, which is very disconcerting.
Kevin, I want you to weigh in here. You've been an immigration attorney for some time now. What are you seeing as the difference in the enforcement? And how does it differ perhaps island by island? Because we know that you're based on Maui. Here on Oahu, perhaps things look a little different.
Yes. Good morning. Thanks for having me. I've been practicing for over a decade and through several different administrations. And I think the difference I would add to what Liza said, the difference right now isn't just the enforcement, but it's what happens after the enforcement. So there's been a bunch of new laws that pass that allow for DHS to detain people while they're waiting for their hearings. So before, remember, immigration violations are civil violations. So we're already in some strange territory keeping people in custody for civil violations. But during the pendency of their claim, which can be years at times, they're now being held in the federal detention center instead of being released and allowed to appear for their court appearances in person. So that's a big difference. And I would say in terms of the differences for the islands, I think there's been more enforcement activity on Oahu just because the ICE offices are here and it's just easier. But there's been several big significant raids on my home island, which is Maui, including a raid of the fire of the housing that was created for the fire survivors on the day of their ribbon cutting ceremony. ICE was there knocking on people's doors and doing enforcement activity. And then as recently as this past weekend, at one of our Mormon churches, there was some enforcement activity. So as Liza mentioned, sensitive locations like churches, schools, and hospitals, which were off the table before, are now places where enforcement can happen.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that enforcement activity over the weekend at that church in particular?
Yes. So we received a call that at the Tongan Mormon Church, there were ICE agents there with pictures of I guess, parishioners, maybe, I guess you'd call them, but they were looking for folks with their photographs. And when they were told that they weren't there, they they said, well, that's okay. We're going to wait until everybody comes out of the church. So they waited in the parking lot for everybody to come out of the church.
Representative Albalati, want to get your take on what you're seeing on the ground and what the legislature can do. Given that this is a federal issue, what is the state's role in all of this?
So what we're seeing on the ground are not these big raids on Oahu. I think we're hearing reports of individuals being picked up, and that's what's concerning. I will say that this report from Maui is new, and it's disturbing because we had an opportunity last year to pass some of these bills that the state does have authority over. This is not solely a federal issue. We can enact laws that protect and shape law enforcement and how they practice here in the state. So, for example, we've seen many enforcement officers wearing no mask and not being identified on the mainland. And that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of law that we could pass. Other states have done that. They did that in the past few months. So that's called a no secret police bill. Those are the kinds of laws we can pass.
Okay. Liza, I want to key into something that you said. You said that other law enforcement agencies are basically being duplicated, if you will, to then act as ICE enforcement officers. Mm-hmm. What kind of entities are we talking about? How many officers do you think are participating now in this new way?
Well, there are federal agencies for everything from the IRS to the Coast Guard to drug enforcement that are being pulled into these kinds of low-level immigration operations, right? And I think one thing that gets lost in that conversation is they had jobs. Mm-hmm. They were doing important jobs. You know, Homeland Security Investigation, which is under Department of Homeland Security, they had an important job of going after cartels, after contraband, after folks that are engaging in trafficking. They get pulled off of that job. And they get pulled into looking for folks who have one civil violation, who have maybe overstayed a visa here and are working in agriculture and otherwise, you know, not committing any crimes. Right now, at this moment in time, according to Syracuse University, 73.6% of the people that have been detained under this new the administration since January 2025 have no criminal conviction. So these agencies are being pulled off of the jobs that are important, that do keep us safe, and they're being asked to do a different job, which is tearing apart our communities. And I think that is very disconcerting. Even if you don't feel sympathetically about immigration, you should be concerned that so many of these federal agencies are being, 2,000 agents have been sent to Minneapolis, right? They are not doing their job elsewhere now. And that's very disconcerting.
Want to get to a caller on the line. Oh, just a second. We want to invite all of our callers, rather, to give us a call, 808-941-3689. Thank you for those of you who are calling in. We want to get to you in just a minute. But first, let's go back to Kevin. Kevin, do we have a sense of how many folks are in this population when we think about folks who may be undocumented in the islands? I've heard estimates around 40,000. Do we have a sense of how many people we're talking about?
That's a great question and something we've been trying to figure out for the better part of the last couple decades. It's difficult to ascertain with accuracy because the census is the metric that we rely on to know how many people are here, and obviously undocumented people don't respond to the census. So I think those I think whatever estimates are out there, 40,000, they're probably just a little bit on the low side. Maui has quite a large population of undocumented folks, but it's also important to remember that most undocumented people are in mixed status families. So the way that family configurations arise, an undocumented person may be a parent who has children that were born here, so that's a mixed status family, or a husband may have status and the wife may be undocumented, or kids may be undocumented and their parents may be documented. So we're talking about Hawaii families that may have a person who lacks the proper documentation, but they aren't. There's not a big army of undocumented folks that are existing as a monolith. They're already integrated into the community and into the families.
Let's get to Steve now, who's giving us a call. Steve, good morning. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for inviting me, and I'm enjoying your panel very much. I am in correspondence with friends in Minneapolis, where, as you know, there have been a lot of arrests and activities and a woman who was shot. I'm in talking to people in a church group there. They say that they have had a number of incidents where U.S. citizens, legitimate U.S. citizens, have been profiled by ICE and arrested and kept in detention for a while before they've finally been released. And I want to know, have we had any problems in Hawaii with ICE profiling people and arresting American citizens through profiling, as has been happening in Minneapolis?
Okay, Steve, thanks for your call. Kevin would love to hear your thoughts.
So the situation that happened on Maui with the school teachers that were here on legal visas is an example of what could potentially happen where people do have proper documentation or they are citizens. And the reason that I think that it happens is because when you have a rapid expansion of an enforcement arm of the federal government, then and you have a imperative that they've been given from their leadership to arrest a certain number of people today per day, like a quota, there's going to be mistakes that happen. And it's really hard to tell in just by looking at somebody what their status or their citizenship is. And so you're going to end up with civil rights violations as they arrest people that seem like they're immigrants or seem like they have brown skin or seem like they don't speak English. And you're also going to end up arresting United States citizens. It's inevitable.
Della, I'm curious to hear from you. You mentioned the secret police law that you're looking at. What other sort of levers do you think that the state government has, given, again, that this is a federal issue, and I'm not sure that the state has authority?
So there's also bills like the sensitive locations bills. You know, at last session, we were promised by the attorney general that there were policies that would not permit detentions occurring on state properties and that there were going to be clear policies and we could rely on that. But over the interim, we saw an arrest at a Maui courthouse. So that was improper. We can, again, define and enact and codify the policies that need to be followed by all law enforcement. And that, in fact, keeps everybody safe. And so sensitive locations is another good bill. I'll also say that there are bills that would protect data privacy. You know, there's no reason why these far-reaching federal agencies need to have information, medical history information. So we can also protect our data. That's the things that the state has the responsibility over and we can do.
We want to note, of course, there are those who support immigration enforcement. We also want to say that we did reach out to ICE for their perspective. We have not heard back, but we do welcome them to join the conversation this morning. We also spoke to State Senator Brenton Awa. He's the Senate Minority Leader. Here's his take.
One of the things that we would, like, if I was all powerful, we would make sure that foreigners got to go. So that's what I mean. It's like, do I agree with shootings and all that stuff that's happening? No, nobody should be losing their life. But at the same time, we know that plenty of people are coming in. And when wealthy people are coming in, and that's not the case with the immigrants, right? Like, but overall, but that's what we're trying to stop here is either way you want to look at it, stopping or making it a place where we can afford to live. That's our end goal. And so if I was in a position where I could do that, like the president, I would do that. It would be frowned upon by some, but at the end of the day, we think it would help people live here. And so that's why I say, I get what he's doing. I understand it. We're not going to fight that. I disagree with the Tonga aspect of it.
Okay, I want to go to Liza. There's two things that the senator pointed out in there. Tonga is a separate discussion, and we can touch on that in a minute. But first, just to the overall idea that, you know, people who argue that those being arrested and deported broke the law and should therefore face the consequence.
So I want to go back to something that Kevin said. Immigration law is civil law. It's not criminal law. And it is not unlawful to come to this country and apply for asylum. Many of the people that we see here that are lacking status, they are in the process of trying to get a status here. They are working with Kevin as he might be representing them, helping them go to court, going through the process. It is very, very complicated. And it has also changed many, many times over the last several decades. It is hard for those of us who our full-time job is keeping up with immigration policy to know what the policy is. So I challenge anyone who has that belief to talk to somebody who has gone through the process of trying to get a visa, trying to become an American citizen, to understand how challenging that can be, especially since we have made it more and more difficult. Right now, we are seeing all the fee waivers for folks that it's very expensive to go through this process, and people so desperately want to become citizens. They love being in this country. They love contributing to our communities. And one way that is preyed upon, that desire to become a citizen, is that we have folks that say they can get you a visa for $10,000. And people so desperately want that and to be right and to be able to contribute fully that they pay that money. And then that individual is gone, right? And so I understand the senator's sentiment. We are all dealing with an affordability crisis. It is difficult for every single person here. Within our industries, our essential workers, immigrants make up nearly 70% of our house cleaners. They make up more than 50% of our chefs and cooks in our visitor industry. They are more than 40% of our agricultural worker. These are working class people that make Hawaii work, and they are intricate parts of our community.
Let's bring in another voice here. Daniel is on the line. Daniel, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I had two questions for you that I wanted to share. The first one would be, what is your suggestion for some of these people who are living in Hawaii that don't have citizenship and they decided not to have citizenship or haven't made the effort to get it and they still live in Hawaii? And my second question is we have a lot of I surf a lot. I'm in the ocean a lot, which a lot of people here in Hawaii a lot. And we have a lot of multinational people that come to Hawaii to surf and whatnot. And some of them come here and then some of them decide to stay. A lot of them say there's a lot of Brazilians that come to Hawaii and they end up staying because they like Hawaii a lot better than Brazil. And a lot of them don't have citizenship. And so now they're out into surf and they have a different mentality and lifestyle and code of ethics when they're in the water. And so they're also breaking a lot of laws where they come out on jet skis where they don't follow the law. They don't get their jet ski registered. They don't get their trailer registered. Their cars are not registered. So I'm just suggesting, I'm just wondering, what is your thoughts on, say somebody that surfs a lot, and we have a lot of people who don't have citizenship that are living here, and they're just interfering with the fun. They're taking away the enjoyment of the ocean.
Daniel, thank you so much for your call. Kevin would love to get your thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel, for that great question. Yeah, I would say a couple things. Kind of going back to what Liza was said, but to sort of tie that into my response to you, I would say that many of our thoughts about immigrants and foreigners in general are premised on some ideas that may or may not be true. So, for instance, the crime aspect. So, foreign-born or immigrant populations are much less likely to commit crimes than people who are born in the United States. There's also the fact that in areas where there are immigrants, there are actually more jobs created from the immigrant population rather than less jobs. And also, 99% of my immigrant clients pay taxes. They get I-10 numbers and they pay taxes. So I think the idea that they're taking something away from us or infringing somehow on our freedoms is actually a misnomer. They're actually adding to our community through their presence here. And there's another kind of misconception that people are here not pursuing ways to advance their status. They're actually, it's really complicated in order to get status, and sometimes it takes years. But most of the folks that I encounter are really affirmatively and diligently trying to better their status while they're here.
You're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking today about immigration enforcement in the islands. You can join the discussion, too, by calling 808-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Support for HPR comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits committed to helping families of agricultural workers and retirees with affordable housing, such as the Kunia Village Development Corporation, NereidHawaii.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Marco Rubio once called Donald Trump a con artist. Now as Secretary of State, he's defending policies he once opposed and overseeing deep cuts to the very foreign aid programs he once supported. New Yorker staff writer Dexter Filkins will join us to talk about his new article on Rubio's political transformation. Join us.
Beginning this afternoon at 3, following On Point.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Yenchi Denise. Our guest in the studio this morning are State Representative Della Albalati, Liza Ryan Gill, Executive Director for the Hawaii Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and Immigration Attorney Kevin Block. And a reminder, the number to call and share your insights is 808-941-3689. Representative Della Albalati, I want to build on what Kevin had shared about the clients that he represents and also those statistics that Liza had shared just about how many working folks that we're talking about. From your vantage point, when we talk about people who are being targeted by ICE enforcement, who are we talking about?
We're talking about a wide range of people and different kinds of policies. I actually wanted to pick up on the policy of not ICE enforcement, but how this federal government is using fees to also go after immigrants. And it's really this is really disconcerting to me, this anti-immigrant sentiment that we saw in Senator Awa's comments, the comment that he made, foreigners gotta go. The reality is that our federal policies are now like increasing fees on people to come here, people we need. So for example, when this Trump administration increased the fees for visas for healthcare workers, that threatened a pipeline of physicians and healthcare workers for our big institutions like Hawaii Pacific Health, because they increased and jacked up the fees to $100,000 a year. Now, we need those people. It's not foreigners who gotta go. It's people we need to work here. And so it's not just simply about the enforcement and people being detained. It's who we're also keeping out. Hawaii is a place of immigration. We are built on immigrants. And so I think here we understand that we need all kinds of people here. And so these policies that are excluding people from countries that simply because there's more brown people are wrong. And that's what's really disconcerting to me. And so we need to speak up against that.
Let's head over to Maui. Marco is on the line from Maui. Marco,
if you'd
good morning.
Like to make a call, please hang up.
Looks like we lost Marco, but Marco, do call us back. And anyone who wants to participate this morning, again, 941-3689. Representative Belotti, I want to tell the callers about a new community group, a volunteer group that you've been affiliated with, the Oahu Rapid Response Coalition. This organization has created a hotline where people can call in when they see ICE enforcement so that others can then document the action. We had a chance to speak with the founder of this group, Gay Chan, who acknowledges that there is risk to this kind of involvement, especially given what happened in Minneapolis.
We want to witness and verify and document ICE sightings. We want to share the information to protect ourselves and each other. And we want to support everyone in exercising our protected rights. I knew it's scary because things have been escalating for a while. but it's better than sitting at home fretting about it. And I think based on the sign up for volunteers, it's spiked since the murder. So I think that people are afraid, but I suspect that many people feel like me, that if we don't do something about it now, there might not be much to do anything about.
Representative Bilotti, you are a part of this group. Tell us a little bit about what this would actually look like, you know, when someone calls the hotline if they see an ICE agent in community.
So this is a volunteer network, and it's people who are calling in. There is an intake line where they're hoping that it'll be set up 24/7. There's a process for verifying if it happens, and then deploying witnesses who can document, and then taking that information in to provide and build up the data set so that we understand. It's also a hotline that will connect families if we are able to get that information, who may be affected by detainments where family members might have been arrested, to provide support and services. And finally, it's also a way to also connect people up with legal representation if they need it. These are all volunteers. And so this is about watching and being vigilant, but not impeding or interfering with any kind of law enforcement, because that's what the other side is going to try to paint this as an action of impediment. What I think what it really is about educating the community and doing what is lawful. It is not unlawful to record activity happening in public settings.
Kevin, what would this kind of documentation do for a case, you know, that you might be representing? Why would it be helpful?
Well, it's always helpful for us to make a case for somebody if there have been due process violations in the lead up to their being detained. And it also helps sort of give a larger picture. Some of the statistics that we rely on that are pushing back against the idea that the only people that are getting arrested are criminals, you know, and just in terms of sheer numbers, I think 70% of the people that have been arrested thus far have committed no crimes or have minor civil violations. But in general, it's also really important to witness this ICE police force. You know, I like to lower the temperature as much as possible. I mean, I've worked with with these ICE agents that are here in Hawaii for a long time. Some of them, we have great, respectful, friendly relationships, but the surge in employment of unqualified people that they have 47 days worth of training, and they're given firearms, and they're given an imperative to arrest a certain number of people a day. And I think that's why you need people documenting and you need witnesses, because there's going to be civil rights violations.
Liza, you know, given what happened in Minneapolis, do you have concern about the safety of people who are engaging in this hotline?
Yes. I think, unfortunately, all of us who do this work and choose to stand up for our neighbors in many different times, in many different situations, whether that is that you're going to a protest for Red Hill or something, or going to Mauna Kea, like we choose to engage in our constitutional rights for protest. And in that, we hope that our federal government has due process, that we have the ability to plead our case in court. And what we are seeing right now is that much of that is being stripped away. And therefore, it is that much more important that we have well-trained volunteers, that we have well-trained observers, that people are taking accurate information, that they are recording, because these are the ways that we will hold our federal government to account of what they are doing. And I think to go back to the work that the representative is doing and the work that Kevin is doing, one of the reasons why we're launching the Campaign for Immigrant Justice and calling it, you know, defending due process, is that we are not trying to proactively give more rights to people. We are just literally trying to defend the things that make this country what it is and the Constitution, and ensure that all of our population knows that they are able to plead their case in court and that they are going to go through the proper process. And I think that's really disconcerting. Even looking at the murder of Renee Good, there was lots of conversation about whether or not she did this right or this wrong. She has a right to be there. She could have been rude and still had that right. She wasn't, but she could have. And I think we need to remember that we don't have to be polite. We don't have to say all the right words. We have the right not to be shot by our federal government. without that due process, without being a, if we are not a threat to them. And it was clear that she was not a threat.
We did ask Senator Brenton Awa and Aloha State Daily Editor-in-Chief Akam Napier about their thoughts on this kind of civilian action. Let's take a listen.
You know, you log on to your social media, you go to the internet, you open Google, and it's giving you recommendations based on how you think or what you're talking about, right? What it's listening to you talk about. And because there's so much information, it's hard. You got to be very calculated. I think if you're asking me what Delob's doing, I don't know specifically what she's doing about mobilizing people, but it can be dangerous. In Hawaii, you wouldn't think that it would happen, or the Aloha State, and that's the only thing that really moves people or gets things done, really, is Aloha. But in this polarizing time, would I be doing that? No. But then again, I think that in this case, when it comes to immigration, we should let them do their job. I know a lot of people will be upset about that. If they want to peacefully protest, then yes, go ahead, peacefully protest. But it can't be anything more. I wouldn't want to see anybody obstructing justice and taking it that extreme where, you know, we end up having a situation like Minnesota. That doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, people can be as upset as they want to be, and they can express that, you know, in any peaceful fashion that they choose. If they want to stand by the side of the road and wave signs and if they want to yell things at ICE, right? I mean, that's speech. That's fine. What is escalating here is, like I said earlier, this more activist approach of directly interfering with the operations of law enforcement. Like, that's a really different thing, right? That's beyond speech. That's action. Some people may regard it as a form of valid civil disobedience, but I don't think they can deny that it's a different order of behavior than merely speaking one's mind.
Representative Bilotti, how do you ensure that observing does not escalate into interference?
I think that's why the Oahu Rapid Response Coalition really took it slow, and they're being very deliberate and doing lots of training for folks. And so, yes, it's a different kind of activism, but it's still permissible. When I think about, you could just be a witness and see someone being roughed up by police and law enforcement, you on the sidewalk, you're literally allowed to just whip out your phone and start videotaping. That is not interfering. And so I think the training is really important. I really like what Kevin said about lowering the temperature. You know, in some ways, we're fortunate on Oahu that we haven't seen these large raids. It's in part because we have a population that knows about this. When you look at our history of the Japanese internment, and people being taken away from their homes, I think what we need to do is part of this is about training and talking about it and showing and demonstrating that we care and that we're not going to let people just be swept away in those kinds of raids. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen it here in Hawaii. Nobody in the coalition is telling people to interfere. Mm-hmm. No one is saying that's one of the tenets. So I want to be clear about that. This is not an organization that's going to interfere or impede.
Let's get to Marco now, calling us back from Maui. Marco, good morning.
Good morning.
Please go ahead.
My question is this. I live here in South Maui in a neighborhood that is surrounded by short-term rentals and so forth. And over time, you see visitors from every corner of the globe, from Asia to Europe to Eastern Europe, Australia, the Netherlands. I mean, we've seen them all. My question is, what does the current ICE protocol mean to foreign visitors, especially ones from India or South Asia that have brown skin, or even Mexico or Spain? Are they subject to immediate incarceration like U.S. citizens are? And we have to really think about that, because these islands depend on visitors. I'm sorry to say that, but without the tourist visitors, most of the jobs here go away, and it's going to leave things in a very dilapidated situation.
Marco, thank you for that perspective. Liza, your thoughts on that?
I'll just speak to one part of it, and I'm sure that Kevin has more information about what it might look like for a visitor legally. But an anecdote, a news story that we many might remember is those two German girls that were held and were taken to the federal detention center with people who had committed federal crimes. And we, you know, we moved through that story here in Hawaii. We said, you know, that's terrible. That sounds like, you know, not a great night for them, and kind of could understand. They came here. They didn't know exactly where they were staying, but they were a bunch of, they were young girls on their gap year. That's pretty reasonable. But they went through a really traumatic experience. That story went all over Europe. And when we talked to some of the consulates, the foreign consulates and our German consulate here too, they let us know that that story was all over Europe and people did not want to come here and that it was very, very disconcerting for them. So I think it is something that we have to be aware of. I was born in Canada. I know that our Canadian visitors, our, my friends and family from the north are not coming here as often because they are worried about our political climate. They are worried about what somebody might do to them, throw them in a detention center, and what is their recourse. So whatever you believe about tourism is having an impact.
Kevin.
Yeah. Thanks for your question, Marco, fellow Mauian. I don't have much to add other than there is a process where visitors from other countries receive tourist visas and their stays are limited when they enter the country. But what's different now is that the Customs and Border Patrol that interviews a person who's coming in to visit can now check their social media and their phone in order to make sure that there isn't any anti-Trump or anti-U.S. government policy information. So it's really, you know, whether or not you agree or disagree about whether we should curtail the freedom of speech of our guests, it's important to remember that it is only a matter of time, and in fact, it's already happening before our freedom of speech is curtailed. And that's one of the foundational freedoms found in the First Amendment that our country is built upon.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We are exploring the question of immigration enforcement with our panel. Join our discussion by calling 808-941-3689. We'll be right back after a quick break.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
What I hear this time and what I see is that the Iranian people have lost their fear. I think no matter how much force the government uses and the level of crackdowns, it can crush protests periodically, but it can't kill the dream.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Beginning this evening at 6:30.
Support for HPR comes from Osher Lifelong Learning Institute for ages 50 and older, with courses designed to engage the mind and enrich lives. Classes begin February 2nd, olliuhm.org.
Welcome back. I'm Yenji Denise in for Catherine Cruz today. We have a live call-in show around immigration. We welcome your perspectives on this issue. Give us a call, 941-3689. We are joined live in studio by State Representative Della Albalati, Liza Ryan Gill, Executive Director for the Hawaii Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and Immigration Attorney Kevin Block. And John is on the line from Lower Puna. John, good morning. What's your question?
Okay, I really don't have a question. I just have an input to say. And that, first of all, is that let me say that in 1970, I migrated from the United States into Canada because I was disgusted with the political climate of the United States after getting my discharge from the United States Air Force. And I entered Canada legally on a tourist visa. But when I decided that I wanted to stay, I went to immigrations, and it took me about a year to get my immigration. So Canada took me in, and I spent 7 years in Canada working with the Canadian government went up, so I have empathy. Well, when I moved to Hawaii 26 years ago, the only people that have shown up in Lower Puna on my road where I live off-grid is two Russian kids who happened to show up here who were illegal in the country, and I did everything that I could, and they were great people. They worked harder than the people around me, and both of them have been absorbed into the society now. One got married to an American, and the other guy is... Wow. Most of this took place before the current Trump regime decided to ban all the rapists and the murderers and all the... And, you know, that's just a bunch of garbage.
Well, John, thank you so much for your input this morning. And Liza, you know, John's comment really speaks to the statistics that you shared earlier about sort of the profile, if you will, of who is in our community. When we think about who is an immigrant in Hawaii, who are we talking about?
Well, you're probably talking about a Filipino. That is 50% of the 256,000 folks that are foreign born in our state are Filipino, and many of them are middle-aged Filipino women that are working in essential industries. They're working in home health. They're working in the hotels. They are working in agriculture. These are all bedrock parts of our economy here in Hawaii, and are contributing. And I think, you know, that comment really spanned the gamut of different experiences. And that's the reality, is that when we talk about immigrants, we're talking about people. We're just talking about families. We are talking about families that are trying to provide the best life that they possibly can. And I'm a mother of two small children. And I can tell you, there's absolutely nothing that I would do to try to give the best life possible for my children. And that's one of the reasons why I do this work and fight for immigrants and migrants in our state, is because I believe that every family has the right to try to make a better future for their keiki.
Kevin, I want to go back to something that you shared at the very beginning, the sensitive places, the legislation that Representative Della Albalotti is working on, and what you shared about folks, immigration enforcement at a church over the weekend. When people avoid schools, hospitals, churches, what is the consequence of that? Not only to the person who doesn't necessarily call 911 or go to those places, mm-hmm. but for the rest of our community.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. So kind of dovetailing with what Liza said, after the fire in Lahaina, we found out that 30% of the people that were impacted were immigrants or foreign born. So whether we like it or not, immigrants are integrated into our civic life here in Hawaii in particular. And when a person stops participating in civic life, when they stop sending their kids to school, when they stop going to the hospital, when they stop calling the police because they're afraid that the police are going to give their names to ICE, when they stop going to their jobs, when they stop paying their taxes, all of those things affect all of us. We need everybody to participate in civic life. That's what makes our society work. And so the chilling effect of having people show up at churches will make people stop going to worship. And if they're showing up at schools, parents are going to keep their kids home from school. And if they start showing up at hospitals doing enforcement, then people who are sick are going to die because they're not going to go to the hospital when they need care. And that's just the reality of it.
We're closing in on the hour. I do want to get to one more caller before we go to our final thoughts this morning. Cheryl is calling us from Kaimuki. And Cheryl, if I'm not mistaken, I think a lot of folks may be familiar with your story. But Cheryl, if you could tell us why you're calling in this morning.
Thank you so much. I am a U.S. citizen and lived in Hawaii for most of my life. I'm 63 years old now. I am married to a man who was taken by ICE 2.5 months ago. I live with 3 significant disabilities, and I have 2 questions. Number one, something that you touched on earlier in this conversation about civil law and the fact that ICE, in cooperation with a federal prison, is keeping immigrants who are detained well beyond their habeas rights. Is there any progress or legal intervention happening with regard to that? And is there any hope for better outcomes in the future? Number two, Has anyone on the panel noticed since January, I'm highly aware of what I've noticed, but has anyone on the panel noticed a shift or turn? Is anyone receiving grace when it's asked for at this time from those in authority in Washington, D.C.?
Cheryl, thank you so much for giving us a call this morning. Kevin, if you could take the first part of her question, the civil law and versus the criminal enforcement aspect of this.
Hi, Cheryl. It's Kevin Block. I think that thanks for your great question. I think that habeas is the remedy that most of us are seeking right now. Habeas is a part of our law that's fundamental that allows for a person who feels like their detention is unwarranted and unjust to file a claim with the court and to ask to be able to present their case so that they can be released. I want you to know that there are also many organizations like the ACLU, CHRLA, and the National Immigration Rights Center that are fighting cases on the federal level to try to address the fact that many of these folks are being held, just like you said, far beyond what is reasonable, and given the fact that their violations are civil, possibly in violation of their constitutional rights.
And Liza, just to the second part of Cheryl's comment this morning, the idea that things have shifted since January, have you felt a shift in enforcement?
There is definitely a shift when it comes to who is being held at the federal detention center and for how long. I think that is a major. Kevin spoke to this earlier, that many times, again, this is a civil violation. You'll be told that your case is being heard and you continue on. You show up for your court date, just like many of us would show up for, you know, for traffic court about our parking ticket or something. That's how it would go. Instead, many of these individuals, so like when I look at the census count, so how many people are in our federal detention center every day, we've seen it come up from 15 people to an 81 daily census. So that means there are that many more folks that are being held because they're not being released in the process of their case. They're not giving bond. Even for folks that are not a flight risk and that don't present any danger. And so that's really disconcerting. It also means that they are, you know, they're not with their families. They may have a really challenging time accessing a legal resource or advisor. So that is one of the problems. You have the right to have an attorney, but one will not be provided to you in immigration court. So many people are going through, including children, are going through their process, standing in front of a judge, standing in front of a prosecutor in a language that they don't understand without an attorney on their side, and they may be a child.
I think, Yenji, one of the things that we're learning from some of the lawyers who are representing people in before federal court is that we're also seeing people moved from detention center to detention center. And so what Hawaii is becoming is a place where a person might be there for, that's a fifth detention center they've been in, and their own families in their home states don't know where they are. And so what I would do is for that, we need to call upon our federal delegation. You know, Congress needs to have more oversight over these kinds of detention centers because people are getting moved around.
We are out of time, but I do want to hear a final thought from each of you. So Kevin, if we could start with you, we know it's a complex issue. There'll be a lot more discussion on this, but where do you want to leave our listeners this morning?
Well, anytime somebody puts a microphone in front of me, I say this, which is that it is arguable, perhaps, whether the United States even has jurisdiction to deport people from land that is possibly stolen. And there's been no reconciliation or finalization with or settlement of the lands of Hawaii. So it is, you know, at the end of the day, when you take a higher level view of this, these are people. And if we're guided by a love of our brothers and sisters, that's a common element in most spiritual practices, and it is what guides most of us who are doing this work. And I think it's what guides many of the people who are on the other side too. So I think that's the common ground that we need to find and develop.
Representative Bilotti.
What I'd say is for those of you who are on Oahu and who are interested in learning more about Know Your Rights and how to responsibly, you know, be a witness to this, to document things, please call Oahu Rapid Response Coalition at 808-824-4707.
Thank you so much. And Liza, if you'll take us home this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to convey that we still have agency. both as individuals. Each one of us has power. We have power to call our elected officials. We have power to care for our neighbors. We have power to speak life to our children and to encourage them. And the way that I'm choosing to use my power right now is to work with the Campaign for Immigrant Justice. And we encourage folks to join us. You can go to our website at HawaiiCoalitionForImmigrantRights.org, HICIR, and sign on and join us at the legislature. Join us at the Capitol this year as we fight to maintain our due process and to draw a line in the sand for Hawaii to say, in this state, we believe that everybody has constitutional rights. And we're going to stand firm.
Okay, thank you so much. We do want to thank our guests this morning, Liza Ryan Gill, Representative Della Albalati, and Kevin Block. And of course, we thank you, our listeners, for joining us on today's show. We so appreciate those of you who called in and share your thoughts with us. And that is our show for today. Up tomorrow, we plan to hear from the governor about immigration and the partnership in the works between HMSA and Hawaii Pacific Health. To share a comment about what you heard this morning, call our talkback line at 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you'd like to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Yanji Denise in for Catherine Cruz. Make sure to join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.